This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Opioid-related deaths fell in Wisconsin last year after hitting an all-time high in 2017. Those deaths are from illegal drugs like heroin, but also from prescription painkillers. More and more government leaders, doctors, and others across the country say the makers of prescription drugs are partly to blame for the epidemic of opioid addiction and misuse, including those here in La Crosse County and Wisconsin. Last year, the La Crosse County Board filed a lawsuit against drug makers and distributors, joining around 1,500 other local, state, tribal governments across the U.S. Joining us to talk about the latest in that lawsuit today and how the county has been impacted by the opioid crisis are Tara Johnson, chair of the La Crosse County Board, Sarah Diedrich-Kasdorf, deputy director of government affairs for the Wisconsin Counties Association, Jason Witt, La Crosse County Human Services Director, and Kristen Skolnick, manager of the Integrated Support and Recovery Services section within the County Human Services Department. Sarah, I wonder if you can start by walking us through a little bit about who these lawsuits are filed against and what wrongdoings they allege.
The lawsuits are filed against the major pharmaceutical companies across the United States. Such as Pursue Pharma, for example. They tend to be one of the largest ones, the ones that gets mentioned most often. The counties and other local governmental units and state governments from across the country have claimed that the pharmaceutical companies knew of the addictive nature of opioids and yet continued to promote the sale and use of opioids for uses of which they were not intended. Historically, we knew that opioids were used to provide effective treatment for things such as short-term pain management. And the studies that were done by the pharmaceutical companies actually showed the safety and efficacy of opioids were limited really to short-term use. But they also knew that they could make significant profits if they were able to market and sell opioids for long-term use, including such things as treating chronic pain relief. And so the pharmaceutical companies, some medical professionals from across the country, really started to promote opioids for use in ways that were not really proven to be effective. And in fact, we know that these pharmaceutical companies knew of the addictive nature and failed to disclose it.
So as I mentioned, there are around 1,500 of these lawsuits across the country, and they've been consolidated before one federal judge. And Sarah, I wonder if you can kind of talk about what that means and in the cases in general, but also for La Crosse County specifically.
All local government cases from across the country are part of what is known as the MDL, or the multi-district litigation. And those cases are all being held or heard in the Northern District of Ohio before Judge Poser. So even though there may be states that aren't part of that Northern District of Ohio, for example, all of the pretrial work for all of the cases across the country is taking place in Ohio. And so the first round of litigation will really begin in October of this year, all of it centered in Ohio.
The La Crosse County Board voted unanimously to file this lawsuit in February 2018, following about 60 other Wisconsin counties that came before it. Tara, I wonder if you can kind of step back to that period and remind us why the county board, wanted to get involved in this lawsuit.
I want to start by saying that we really took our time in deciding whether to join the lawsuit with what has now become 71 of the 72 counties in Wisconsin. We were looking at other options, whether some of the more urban counties in Wisconsin would be better positioned to kind of go it alone and pursue litigation, down an alternative path. So we spent quite a bit of time. We were a little bit late to come to it. As you said, there were 60 or so counties who were already in the lawsuit. But I believe, my recollection is that the prevailing arguments for joining the lawsuit, the MDL, as Sarah described, were really centered around what we had seen as just a tremendous increase in demand for services in La Crosse County around everything from child protective services to adult clinical services. really seeing the effect of the opioid crisis playing out in the demand for services at the county level. And knowing that we have for a number of years not been able to keep up in terms of funding from the state and other sources of funding to meet that demand. And then when the realization came that there was, as Sarah had described a moment ago, the correlation between opioid use and the pharmaceutical companies, we saw an opportunity to hold those who are responsible accountable for creating the opioid crisis and really costing La Crosse County taxpayers, not just the dollars, but really quality of life and damages that were done to families and children and individuals as a result of the opioid crisis. So I think that was really the prevailing reason for us to join the lawsuit when we did.
We're hoping to dive deeper into a lot of those issues that you brought up, Tara, as the show goes along here. But, you know, I wonder if you can also, you mentioned La Crosse County considering other methods of litigation moving forward. Were there other cons that you guys were wrestling with back in 2018? And do you have insight now, as now that you have made the decision to join this lawsuit, into whether those are, you know, cons?
Yeah, I think the there were a couple of concerns that were raised. Just, I think in general, for some people, there's a resistance to go to a direct correlation, to say because opioids were overprescribed, because OxyContin exists to begin with, therefore La Crosse County has these additional costs, right? Like, I think there are people who look at that and say it's other factors, it's family values changing, or you know, other shifts in the culture. And so I think my recollection of that debate at the county board level was that there were concerns raised about really trying to, you know, find a silver bullet that would solve the problem and address the, you know, the cost issues, both financial and quality of life. So I think there was some resistance there. I think the other is that there were folks who said, if we go after Big Pharma, then we're all gonna pay higher prescription drug prices across the array of drugs that are available, that somehow, you know, Big Pharma is just going to they're gonna recover the costs, they're going to figure out a way to pay for it on our backs as consumers of prescription drugs. That was talked about a little bit, but my recollection is it wasn't debated really heavily at that point, that we were pretty quick to hear from our corporation counsel what the other avenues of litigation were, and so we probably spent more time looking at other paths, like I mentioned, to maybe join with the more urban counties. And there was less resistance, I would say, on the we shouldn't do this at all side of the argument. Did that answer your question?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's Tara Johnson, La Crosse County Board Chair, here with us today to talk about the opioid epidemic and how a lawsuit filed against prescription drug makers could help address the problem. She's joined by Sarah Diedrich-Kasdorf from the Wisconsin Counties Association, La Crosse County Human Services Director Jason Witt, and Kristen Skolnick from the La Crosse County Human Services Department. You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Sarah, before we got started with the show, you had mentioned that this concern about prescription drug prices and how they might rise because of these sorts of lawsuits, that was actually the concerns of Polk County, the only county that has not signed on to this lawsuit in Wisconsin. Can you share a little bit more about that?
Sure. You know, I think there are a number of reasons why counties chose not to get into the lawsuit, or counties and other local units of government from across the country chose to get into the lawsuit. You know, for us, you know, their counties do have significant concerns with regard to, you know, the use of opioids and other and other drugs all across the state. And for us, while some counties did take a look at the rising cost of prescription drugs, I think really what counties were looking at with regard to the lawsuit was not necessarily, you know, the impact on the drug companies, but really the impacts on the communities that and the citizens that our counties are serving. The lawsuit really isn't necessarily about money. The lawsuit is somewhat about accountability. Sure, it's somewhat about money, but in reality, what we're really talking about here with the lawsuit is abatement of the epidemic. And one of the ways in which to do that is to, you know, try to, you know, hold the pharmaceutical companies accountable for what they did, and therefore, you know, assist all local governments and the states, again, across the nation, in really stemming this epidemic of opioid overuse.
Jason, back in 2018, when the county was considering joining this lawsuit, I wonder what your reaction or your thoughts about this effort were and how it might help La Crosse County with this issue.
Well, at that time, and we continue our in human services dealing with the fallout of this crisis of opioids. And locally, we've seen a tremendous increase in service needs really across the human services spectrum. There has been a growing need for treatment services within the La Crosse County Jail, a growing number of individuals reaching out daily to our outpatient clinic for help. It's even impacted the elderly population we serve, as more and more grandparents are taking on the care of their grandchildren whose parents are suffering from opioid addiction. But really, at that time, and what we continue to deal with, and perhaps the most costly and tragic impact, has really been in relation to our Child Protective Services area, because it's important to remember that this crisis is not only devastating for those who have these addictions, but also for the children, and they too often become the invisible victims of this crisis. And the opioid crisis, in combination at the same time with the meth epidemic, has literally overwhelmed the child welfare system across the state of Wisconsin, and we certainly are seeing those impacts locally as well.
You know, it's really interesting that when you, you know, look at this opioid crisis, it's not just necessarily needing help for those who are experiencing addiction. It's all the people around them that they're touching. I mean, that's what I'm kind of hearing from you, Jason.
Yeah. Well, we've really seen a change in terms of the nature of and needs of those children that are coming into child protection. Now, the Department of Children and Families estimate that we're up to 80% of those cases that are somehow driven or complicated by drug and alcohol abuse issues. And with a result of all of this as well, we've really saw the number of children who have had to be taken out of their home environments surge across the state of Wisconsin. There's been a 40% increase in out-of-home placements across the state between 2012 and 2018. That's 1,500 more children entering out-of-home care in the state of Wisconsin, and those numbers don't even include Milwaukee County, because this crisis has been impacted middle America, small counties as much as large counties, and hits home right here in La Crosse as well, where we've seen those large out-of-home placements.
Do we have a dollar amount understanding of what the opioid epidemic has cost, specifically in the area of child protective services?
Well, we do certainly, you know, both statewide and for La Crosse, if we're just looking at the increase in cost for sustaining the foster care and other types of out-of-home placements here in La Crosse County, that's gone up about $1.9 million in recent years, and that's a 90% increase. And that's where across the state, you've seen certain counties that have had their out-of-home care populations go up more than 50% or more. So I think there's like 23 counties that have seen their out-of-home care populations go up 23% or more. And that has certainly been linked to and driven by the opioid crisis. There was a study that directly linked the increase in opioid hospitalizations and the increase in opioid supply to this rising number of children requiring out-of-home care.
Sarah, I wonder, you know, Jason is sharing statistics not only for La Crosse County, but for the state. And I just wonder what you hear from other county governments, county municipal leaders about this issue.
Sure. The cost to counties has been, you know, extremely high with regard to the opioid epidemic. you know, I think one of the places our counties have seen it in its greatest and saddest form is in the child welfare system. But on top of that, counties have also seen damages in a number of areas as well. You know, we see damages with regard to increased prevention and intervention costs. You know, counties are paying for additional services in their mental health departments. We are paying for medication-assisted treatment, residential treatment, recovery housing, detox programs. We're doing a lot of naloxone education and prevention efforts. We have additional emergency services costs that we are experiencing. We're also seeing, as a result of this opioid epidemic across the state, increased expenses associated with drug crimes, whether that's increased costs for prosecution, jails, addiction treatment, indigent defense costs. We're seeing increased costs in our juvenile justice system as well. On top of that, when we have individuals who are in our county jails who are addicted to opioids, you know, that poses additional difficulties for our jail staff who then have to deal with inmates who are opioid addicted and who may be in need of detoxification services, and also the suicide rate tends to be higher amongst those individuals as well. On top of that, as counties, we have costs as employers. You know, there are studies, you know, nationally that talk about increased health care costs for employers, you know, because of dependence on opioids. We also see a general loss of county employee productivity related to opioid abuse and addiction as well. So the cost to counties are great in many, many areas. Child welfare, again, probably being one of the most, profound.
Yeah, Tara.
La Crosse County is one of a handful of counties that operates nursing homes. And this is another area of cost to La Crosse County is among the list of things that Sarah just mentioned. So they would overlap or spill into nursing home costs. So if patients are coming in to Hillview or to Lakeview and are dealing with an opioid addiction or opioid use problem, the cost to manage their care increases as well. So that's one more layer. Not all counties are experiencing this because not all counties operate nursing homes, but certainly for La Crosse County, that's another, kind of avenue of expense for us as this opioid crisis continues to really plague all of us.
Tara, I feel like that really confronts maybe who people think about when we're talking about the opioid crisis and addiction problems, that this affects a wide span of the population.
Right. So again, Hillview as an example, the nursing home, one of the two nursing homes that La Crosse County operates, sees a lot of rehab patients and patients who are coming in after a hip surgery or, you know, some other major surgery where they're likely being prescribed an opioid to manage their pain. You know, again, back at the beginning when Sarah talked about the lawsuit where the ideal use for opioids is short-term pain management usage. When you are dealing with elderly or people who are otherwise infirmed or who are recovering from a surgery where their opioid use should be for a short amount of time, but for whatever reason, if that needs to continue, then we're talking about anybody in the population, really, but probably most likely elderly who are coming in as a rehab patient, for example, to Hillview. And, you know, staff training and awareness and the cost of making sure that as the provider in that case, we are doing the right thing with helping that patient manage their opioid usage as they come into our nursing homes.
Kristen, I wonder if you can share a little bit more about other services that the county is providing to, you know, people who are kind of suffering from opioid addiction or kind of touched by this opioid crisis that maybe we've seen increased demand for.
Sure. Inside my section, we have a large variety of services we're able to offer. I would say over the past 5 years, you know, I can talk specifically about the Comprehensive Community Services Program. This is a program that's throughout the state of Wisconsin, and it's a psychosocial rehabilitation program really aimed for individuals with mental health and or substance abuse diagnoses throughout their lifespan. So we're talking little tiny children to elderly individuals at end of life. We have seen quite an increase in just the number of participants enrolled in the program and the needs of the participants in the program. In 2013, we had 143 individuals enrolled, and we probably had under 20 children. So out of that 143, many adults. Severe and persistent mental illness seemed to be really the kind of area that we were working within. Now, as of 2018, we've seen an increase. We've are now at almost 500 individuals enrolled in this program, and I would say half of those individuals are children who have been affected by some sort of mental health or substance abuse larger issue within their family unit. So children who you know, have parents who are working with in child protection, perhaps. Maybe they were seeing them in our outpatient clinic, but I think that really speaks to just sheer numbers. From 2013 to 2018, we've increased, you know, significantly in this area. The other thing that I think is really significant is just our staffing patterns inside this section. Again, I go back to this particular program. In 2013, we had about 10 staff in that program for serving 143 clients. Today, inside that program, we have about 45 social workers, therapists, and other staff working to help collaborate and serve individuals. We do a lot of really interesting and fun collaboration with our other partners throughout the county. We have really good relationships with our jail staff. We share outpatient therapy. He spends 27 of his hours in the week across the street inside the jail working with inmates on what their issues are, and then another 10 hours over in our outpatient clinic. So we are able to see individuals inside our jail and then upon release, which is really wonderful. We also collaborate with our Justice Support Services Department. We have a grant that we're working on together, a reentry grant called Fresh Start, where we're able to bring in therapists and peer support specialists, individuals with lived experience, meeting individuals inside the jail who perhaps are in the middle of an addiction and wanting to support them while they are, you know, leaving the jail, entering back into our community in whatever way we can. We have a lot of other programs that we work with inside our clinic, lots of very specific substance abuse counseling, individual therapy. We help people receive referrals for medically assisted treatment if they come to residential treatment. The other thing I think that is very interesting about our section is we talk about increase of needs and just community. We've seen an increase this past year in the number of people who are coming into our triage and intake every Wednesday and Monday. You know, a couple of years ago, we had maybe one or two individuals that would come in asking for services. Not sure what that meant for them. Today, we'll find weeks we have 7, 8, sometimes 10 individuals coming in, a significant increase. And so then what you see is capacity needs. We're having to look at how do we rearrange our intake process so we can meet needs of people in a more timely manner. We look at putting additional resources and perhaps positions into our budget so we can you know, have more staff to manage what we're needing to manage. So an increase in that area too.
Do you feel like, Kristen, that increase in number of people seeking services, you know, is that just, you know, what kind of is behind that? Do you feel like maybe people are better educated about what services the county provides? You know, is it just an increased need? Is it a combination of things? What do you think's driving that?
I think it's a combination. I think that there has been, as Tara kind of said before, there has been a bit of a culture shift. We're seeing individuals coming in with higher needs than I think we've ever seen before. We also have a very different family dynamics where we're working not only with children, but with their parents and with their grandparents. We have I think, done a wonderful job over the years in our joint collaboration with community partners. So I think that's a positive why we are seeing additional people coming through our doors. If we've done a really good job of increasing those collaborations. So I think it's twofold, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Jason, you know, Kristen's really describing a significant increase in just a short amount of time. And if that's just one program, you know, I have to imagine that human services, you know, that takes a toll on budget, that takes a toll on staff needs, you know, those really nitty-gritty things.
It does. And one of the things I think you'd talk about a little bit, just fundamentally how the opioid crisis has changed the nature of the day-to-day work for our service providers and human services. So that will include our child protective workers, our therapists, our crisis workers, because really the nature of a lot of that work brings them inside people's homes. And more that can be fraught with danger. There is homes where there are needles all over because of injection drug users. There's certain substances they can be exposed to going into those homes. There can be weapons in those homes related to the drug trade. And the suffering that these workers see from children really leads to a lot of secondary trauma issues within our workforce as well. We've had just too many parents pass away from an overdose who have children who are in our child protective services system. And sometimes our workers that has to break the news to that child. That can be traumatic for our workers doing that. That's a lifelong traumatic experience for that child being told that. And there was a time when we had child protection that you'd work with the parents for reunification. We're finding more and more once the child goes into out-of-home care, the parent disappears literally and is out of the picture because they're so wrapped up in their drug use. Just one of the reasons why statewide there's been more than a doubling of the length of time that children are spending in care, which is not a good thing at all because these children need permanency and need that connection for their social development. So both in terms of just the nature of the work, the impact on workers, what children are experiencing, again, can't understate what this crisis has meant.
La Crosse County Human Services Director Jason Witt is here with us today to talk about how the epidemic of opioid addiction and misuse is impacting La Crosse County as a lawsuit against the makers of prescription painkillers continues in federal court. Also joining us are Kristen Skolnick from the La Crosse County Human Services Department, La Crosse County Board Chair Tara Johnson, and Sarah Diedrich Kasdorf from the Wisconsin Counties Association. Coming up, we'll continue our conversation on the opioid crisis and its cost to local taxpayers. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. To hear audio archives of today's show, visit our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about the impacts of the opioid crisis felt here in La Crosse County. Last year, the county board voted unanimously to join around 1,500 local, state, and tribal governments suing prescription drug makers for their part in increasing the number of people dependent on opioids. As several test cases in that consolidated lawsuit move forward, we're here with La Crosse County and state leaders to learn more about the local costs of the opioid epidemic. Joining us are Tara Johnson, Chair of the La Crosse County Board, Sarah Diedrich Kasdorf, Deputy Director of Government Affairs for the Wisconsin Counties Association, Jason Witt, La Crosse County Human Services Director, and Kristen Skolnick, Manager of the Integrated Support and Recovery Services Section within the County's Human Services Department. In the first half of the show, you know, we were kind of enumerating some of these costs that the county has seen when it comes to services. And, you know, Tara, I just am kind of curious what your reaction is to all of this and kind of the reaction of the county board as the, you know, we're seeing these increased costs, these increased needs, more staffing. You know, how has the county board kind of felt that shift?
Well, I appreciate how Jason described the shift in terms of how social workers and other staff within the Human Services Department have had to do their job differently or what the conditions are for them doing their job. And I think in general, the county board feels as though there's those you can't compensate staff really for that work in a true, you know, cost benefit way, because when they are as the providers, as the helpers, experiencing that kind of trauma, it's really hard to know how to compensate someone for that. He also talked about the increase of the, you know, the caseloads and the numbers increasing. And I think the board reacts the way probably anybody would, which is, oh my gosh, like I'm sitting in the studio listening to some of the things that Jason and Kristen are saying, and I am blown away by them, right? So the enormity of it and the depth and the profound human impact, I think, continues to be really staggering for us as a board and as a community. So I think we, you know, we're heading into budget season right now, and we'll be hearing from Jason and the other department heads what their increased needs are, and we're going to be blown away again, I expect. And yet we have an obligation to provide these services. That's what we are charged with doing by the state. The way the state of Wisconsin operates is counties are responsible for providing human services, public health, you know, the long list of services. And so I think that we consistently agonize over these decisions when we are needing to increase staffing and pay more county levy dollars to provide these services. And yet understand that that's our obligation. And I think it's also important for listeners to understand that this opioid crisis comes at a time when funding from the state for the past 8-10 years has eroded. And so we have had historically, in recent history for sure, flat or decreasing funds from the state for child protective services for, you know, up until this current biennial budget, we were taking losses in funding from the state to provide these services. And when you consider that on top of the increased demand that the opioid crisis is placing on every county in the state, it really is a double whammy for us. And so I think the county board consistently struggles with and complains about what we are not able to control, which is the, well, probably both of them, the opioid crisis itself. We have to figure out how to address this issue. But in the environment in the state of Wisconsin in the last several years, having decreased funding from the state has made it doubly difficult to feel like even best practices that we use here in La Crosse County, it is difficult to feel like we are making a difference given both of those crises coming at us. So the crisis of decreased state funding and the opioid crisis.
Sarah, I wonder what your thoughts are on this issue of how the state has responded to the opioid crisis and the demands on the county level, the local level. Because we know La Crosse is not alone in seeing these increased costs.
Sure. We at our association chose to focus on increased child welfare funding and aids from the state as our top budget priority when the state was discussing the 2019-21 state biennial budget. Jason went through a number of statistics earlier on the show that really showed the increasing needs for our counties in the child welfare area. And again, that is just one area where counties are seeing increased funding needs as a result of the opioid epidemic. But because child welfare is something that I think everybody can understand, that when we are talking about children and providing services to children and families in need, that it really needs to be a top priority for us. So as an association, we said we need to really focus on the child welfare epidemic. We undertook a campaign like we never have before within within our association to really talk about the impacts of the opioid epidemic on the child welfare system, whether it dealt with the increasing number of children in out-of-home care, whether it's the increasing length of time children are placed in out-of-home care and are spending in out-of-home care because of their parents' or caregivers' addictions, you know, whether we're talking about the impacts on our social workers and caseworkers, and the fact that when we have opioid and drug-addicted parents, it takes caseworkers that much longer to work the case and to work with the family to ensure that it is safe at some point for that child to come back home. So we had a lot of really good statistics and data, and we made a very large ask of the state. We asked for $30 million a year in additional child welfare aids, which would have been a 40% increase. And that $30 million that we asked for in the budget really was, you know, maybe half of what we really need as counties to make some progress in this particular area. In the end, starting in calendar year 2020, we're getting a bump of about $25 million a year, which we think is a great start, but we know the need is so much greater than that, and we're going to have to continue to talk about the impacts of opioids and other drug use, on families all across the state, and continue to make our case as counties to the state as to why we need additional help in that area.
Kristen, before we move on to talking about the next steps in this lawsuit, you know, I want to return to an issue that you had brought up about increased collaboration with the jail. And I just wonder, from your experience, how you feel like law enforcement in the legal system, you know, has their response to this issue of opioid epidemic improved? You know, do you feel like they are better equipped to handle these increased cases?
I think that, at least from what I have seen inside our collaboration, our county jail, we do a beautiful job of collaborating with each other. Since we've been able to have a therapist that's kind of housed in human services and inside the jail to begin that collaboration, we've seen, I think, a lot of success, people being able to literally walk across the street from one building to the other to receive services. I've literally heard from the therapist himself as he's been supporting individuals, in the courtroom. They've mentioned his name, and judges have. That to me says that collaboration is seeping out in other wonderful ways throughout the jail. We do trainings together. We, you know, have conferences and collective meetings together, and we do that very purposely so we can all be kind of on the same page as we're working with people. So I think also that the joint grant that we are in the middle of right now, it's a 3-year grant we're calling Fresh Start, the reentry grant. That's given us an additional opportunity to work side by side with the jail captain and with jailers and talking about the services that are inside the jail and how can we create those services outside of the jail to help people and wrap services around them. So I think that there has been wonderful collaboration and an increase of awareness.
Jason.
I think we're fortunate as a county to have mechanisms like our Criminal Justice Management Council, which La Crosse County has, which monthly has the sheriff, has law enforcement, has courts, has treatment providers at the table. So we have these mechanisms where we're able to do collaborations like this, which is really a benefit in facing a crisis like this, as is other collaborations with all parts of our community, because the capacity to meet these needs aren't only within the governmental system, but it's individuals stepping up across the community to care for whether it's the children or the families that are experiencing this issue. Just for example, our foster care system is at a point we don't have enough foster homes in the state of Wisconsin for the children that are being removed for their homes. And we have that foster care gap here in La Crosse County. We have currently about 69 active foster homes. We need about 110. We would need 41 more to really provide for the needs and not burn out our current foster parents. So we're entering collaborations across the spectrum, and most recently some interesting conversations we're having with the faith community to be able to bring more individuals that really want to help, but how can we band together to do that?
That's Jason Witt and Kristen Skolnick from the La Crosse County Human Services Department here with us today to talk about the opioid epidemic and how a lawsuit filed against prescription drug makers could help address the problem. They're joined by La Crosse County Board Chair Tara Johnson and Sarah Diedrich Kasdorf from the Wisconsin Counties Association. You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Sarah, I wonder if you can share kind of where this lawsuit is at currently and what the next steps are. You mentioned, seeing more action in October.
Yes, so all of the cases that have been consolidated in the Northern District of Ohio before Judge Poser will begin to see some action in October unless there are settlements and settlement talks that occur before that. So we are currently, in the process of several court filings, responses, all of that in preparation for action occurring in October.
Yeah, what is the likelihood that we could see a settlement and not a trial for these cases?
I think that, there's, probably a good likelihood that a settlement is a distinct possibility. There was just a case in a state out west against, I believe, Johnson & Johnson that just had that actually went to trial, came up with a verdict. I think, though, there is a lot of interest amongst the pharmaceutical companies as well as the states and local governments to really talk about a settlement. I think we could spend, an inordinate amount of time on lawsuits, appeals, et cetera, that would take years and years and years to complete. But I think in the end, everybody really has the same goal, and that is abatement of the epidemic. And I think the sooner we can come to settlement on that, the quicker we can get to really, taking a look at abatement of the problem and trying to figure out how it is we can not only, solve the opioid epidemic that we're seeing today, but we can also take a look at how we can prevent such things from happening in the future as well.
Yeah, Sarah, I'm glad you brought up this case. An Oklahoma judge ruling that ordering Johnson & Johnson to pay $572 million. And this is the first one of these cases that we've seen actually go to trial at the end of August. Tara, I wonder from your perspective what you think that ruling means for this case that La Crosse County is a part of, and whether, what your thoughts are on a settlement versus going to trial.
I want to be really clear in stating I am not an attorney, unlike others in the room. Jason has a JD. I don't. But I think, so from a layperson's point of view, I think that settlement is encouraging in that I would imagine it puts more pressure on both parties, really, in the consolidated litigation that Sarah was talking about that La Crosse County is a part of. My guess is that settlement encourages all parties in this other case to redouble efforts in trying to come to some kind of settlement prior to going to trial. I think it shows pretty clearly a $572 million settlement clearly says there was fault and responsibility, and I would imagine that is motivating the defendants in our lawsuit to really question how much risk they have by going to trial. And we've heard all along that there have been settlement talks, as Sarah mentioned. We're hopeful, I think, that this would be settled before going to trial because, as she said, it's a less costly way to arrive at a decision. But I, you know, again, I'm not an attorney. I don't know. I think we would, the sooner the better we can get a decision, and if it's a settlement pre-trial, I think that that would be great. I think the challenge is the dollar amount, and I'm pretty sure we're still worlds apart on that. But
yeah, if La Crosse County were to receive money from this case, whether it's through a ruling from a trial or through a settlement, Tara, what would you want to see that money go towards?
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't think about us getting, you know, windfalls of money very often. I would say first and foremost, I would hope that we are historians in that we remember what happened with tobacco settlement money in this state. And if we have our own unique pot of money that were to come from some settlement or outcome of this case, that we would be wise in to make sure that we were not spending it all at once, and you know, that we were thoughtful about making sure that we have monies over long term to deal with these issues, because the crisis is, you know, really front and center. And some of the stories and numbers that Kristen and Jason have shared this morning, you know, really are shocking to the system. But I think we're also pretty clear that there will be residual damage resulting from the opioid crisis. And it's not just like in the next couple of years we're going to have expenses to deal with in increased staffing and so forth. So I hope that we learn that lesson from the tobacco settlement experience and don't spend all of the money at once. Obviously be smart about how we spend it, but to also make sure that we are looking at the long-term impacts that this crisis will have on this community and the individuals who live in this community.
Sarah, is there any talk among counties to pool any money that comes from a, you know, settlement or the result of this case, you know, to maybe have a larger effort within the state? I mean, is this kind of each county on their own that's in part of the lawsuit, or is there, you know, possibility of a joint effort?
I think it's too early to really kind of speculate on what individual counties may do with the funds. One of the things that the judge in the lawsuit has made very clear to all of the parties involved is that if there are awards to be granted, that a significant portion of those dollars must go toward abatement. And by abatement, what they're really talking about is harm reduction, overdose protection, addiction treatment expansion and enhancing addiction treatment programs, such things as primary prevention to make sure that we are, you know, we are discouraging drug use and overprescription and all of that to begin with. So I think, you know, we will see some very significant differences, as Tara mentioned, if settlement monies come with regard to the opioid lawsuit than we did with the tobacco settlement money. You know, the state of Wisconsin received, you know, funding under the tobacco settlement. The locals received nothing. And yet the state got the funding. We were having some, you know, financial difficulties at the time, as were all other states across the country. The state securitized the money. They used it to fill a budget hole. The money for tobacco went to do things like, road construction. It went to pay for, you know, state prisons. It went to a lot of things. Some of it went toward public health. Some of it went toward tobacco prevention and cessation efforts. But a lot of it went to other things. And I think with the opioid settlement dollars, I think we're going to see the dollars really used toward such things, again, as overdose protection, harm reduction, and treatment and expanded treatment opportunities all across the state.
Jason, very briefly as we wrap up here, how would you like to see any money that comes from this case spent to address the opioid crisis as someone who deals with this boots on the ground?
Well, there certainly are gaps in our system that we could strengthen locally, whether it's supportive housing, whether it's an increased opportunity for residential care, just increasing access to therapy. But I hope a special attention is also made to the prevention and early intervention and the realization that you can have all of these treatment resources, but it's the relationship with the individual that really has to decide that it's time to make that change. And those are some of the soft supports through case management and others to get that individual and that family there to make that change. So I hope the funding can really be used with that broad perspective.
Jason Witt, La Crosse County Human Services Director, Sarah Diedrich Kasdorf from the Wisconsin Counties Association, Tara Johnson, Chair of the La Crosse County Board, and Kristen Skolnick, Manager of the Integrated Support Recovery Services Section of the County Human Services Department. Join us today to talk about the cost of the opioid crisis faced by La Crosse County as a joint lawsuit against drug makers continues in federal court. And that's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. The executive producer for Newsmakers is John Gatto, and our senior news editor and producer is John Davis. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers.